American Women.
Women who have helped to develop the American way of life. Daughters of destiny, mothers of might, co-makers of history. Women whose names are written large upon the honor rolls of our nation's great. Women courageous who have served and sacrificed, drudged and dreamed, pioneered and persevered. Women whose names, deeds, and claims to fame have often been overlooked.
This is their story. 3 centuries of women whose deeds are rooted deep in our past and whose influence will reach far into the future. The story of the pioneer women of today who are blazing the trails of tomorrow. The United States Office of Education and the National Broadcasting Company take pride in presenting the second chapter in this epic tale of women in the making of America. Today's story tells the part women have played in our struggle for another important freedom. Freedom from war. It's the story of gallant American women and their struggle for peace.
In Europe, the dread rumble of war. In the United States, women listen, a cold fear darkening their eyes, terror clutching at their hearts.
War, it's inevitable. It will come here, too.
No. No, we're too sane. We want peace.
Europe wanted peace.
Surely there must be some other way out. War means suicide for the human race. We must abolish it throughout the world.
You can't change human nature. Wait till you hear the bands playing. See the flags waving. You'll shout with the rest.
No. No, I remember too well. Torture of it. Seeing my husband go. Then my son. And me waiting, wondering, not knowing whether they were alive or dead. Women suffer just as much as men from the effects of war.
So you'd be a coward.
I want freedom from war.
A slacker, a traitor to your country.
No. No, not that.
Then you'd fight. You'd do war work.
Oh, I don't know. All I ask is peace.
Peace and war, an age-old conflict.
And yet, in every age, the voice of peace has spoken to every people of every faith. Even before the white man came to America, and long before gunpowder and cannon were introduced, it spoke as the will of an Indian squaw.
Tomahawks are laid aside as the chiefs of the 5 great Iroquois nations gather round the council fire.
There before them stands a woman, tall and stately like the pine tree, hands extended to her people.
90 chiefs of brother nations, we have called this council meeting with a dream of peace inspired. Peace for all God's forest children. We would join them all in friendship. Never more to fight in battle, never more to scalp and plunder.
This is foolish hope, O woman. You have spoken like dreamer. Ever have the warriors battled. Never will they join as brothers.
I have seen it in a vision. Seen the hand of the Great Spirit holding high the sacred peace pact.
Part of the dream of that Indian squaw came true. The 5 great Iroquois nations did join in friendship. But to the other Indian tribes, the name of Iroquois became the symbol for terror and bloodshed, power and fierce cruelty.
And soon, there was a new tribe to contend with. Men with pale white faces and long black sticks that blazed like thunder.
So they came, the pale faces, seeking land and homes in the new world. French and English bringing seeds of old world antagonisms with them.
1690. On a hill above the Connecticut River, a stockade of peeled logs stands guard. Within, there is great activity. Women churning with no butter in their churns, spinning with no thread on their spindles, children laughing with no smiles on their lips, and three men chopping, hammering.
That's it. Keep it up. Keep it up. They'll never guess how few we are inside this fort or how weak. Margaret, didn't you stop? Talk, work, laugh.
I can't. I can't go on any longer.
Ah, but you must. If the Indians should attack us before our men get back here with supplies.
I've had enough of fear and fighting. This isn't what we came to America for.
We wanted a home for our children, not a fort.
Aye, we want peace.
You all know that peace is impossible so long as the French keep goading the Indians against us. Why, I'll wager one out of every four of these savages is a Frenchman beneath his war paint.
Why must you men bring your war over here? Why not leave it in Europe?
Ah, there's no time for idle chatter, Margaret. Get you back to your work. Each one of you. Laugh, talk, work, work.
Margaret's right. We're mad to go on like this day after day, pretending we have enough food, enough men.
Well, what else can we do?
We can leave the frontier.
No, that we can't do. This is our home we're fighting for, our children's home. If war is the price we must pay, so that they and their children may live on here in America in peace, then I'll pay it. Come on, back to our work. Pound your churns. Turn the spinning wheels. That's it. Laugh, talk. Churn, 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 churn.
From the sacrifices of war, women learn the value of peace. But while some fought that future generations might be free from war, others claim that freedom for present generations. Women in gray bonnets and prim white shawls.
We are friends. Perhaps thee calls us Quakers. 'Tis against our principles to fight, whatever the cause.
You Quakers are cowards.
You're afraid to fight.
Nay, we wish only to live in peace and brotherly love.
Cowards.
Cowards?
French and Indian wars, the Quakers stood firm for peace, in spite of persecution. And all through the years that followed, as colonists plotted a revolution, as daughters of liberty, women fought beside the Minutemen. The night of December 2nd, 1777, British troops are occupying Philadelphia. In the home of the Irish Quaker, Lydia Dava, two red-coated officers bend over a map, while outside the door, a woman listens.
You see, Captain, on the evening of December 4th, all our troops will close in here, near that fort.
Ah, we'll have those blasted rebels in a trap.
A trap?
Lydia.
Hush, husband.
Fie on thee, woman, listening at keyholes.
Dara, they're planning to attack General Washington.
Is thee certain of it?
Aye. Dara, thee must go warn him.
Me, a Quaker, go meddling in war?
Just to give a word of warning and save the lives of thy own countrymen. Surely that is not an unchristianly deed.
'Tis aiding and abetting an army.
But think if thee does not go and the British attack, then the battle and the deaths will be on thy head.
Sure, Lydia. And thee can talk a man around thy little finger.
Thee will go then.
That I won't.
Then hand me my cloak.
Surely thee would not go alone through the British lines.
And my bonnet?
'Tis mad thee is. The friends will condemn thee for this deed.
Surely God will forgive me. Good night.
Thee will be banished out of meeting.
Perhaps. Good night, Dara.
Lydia. Lydia.
Lydia Dara was disowned by the Friends Society for meddling in war. But from sacrifices of war, women learned the value of peace. 13 separate colonies that might have become 13 warring nations, joining instead as one peaceful union. Peace. Men and women had learned its value. And Washington, returning his sword to the civilian arm of the young republic, asked for the rule of reason instead of force. Then 1812, and the guns of war again challenged. But this time, the voice of reason could not be stilled. Men were preaching peace, laying the responsibility for maintenance upon the women.
Men, organizing the nation's first peace societies, urging the women to join, to work. Men like Noah Worcester.
I believe that the abolition of war will be completely in the power of women. If every female in Christendom would unite against it and work faithfully for 30 years, war might lose all its fascinating charms. The next generation might regard it with abhorrence.
Women for peace, organizing, working, writing, speaking. Angelina Grimkin, pleading for it as she pleads for the Negro. Lucretia Mott, Quaker, carrying on the Quaker tradition.
Peace, it is the inalienable right of every American. How can we have life, liberty, and happiness without it? We must use every right we have to gain this greater right. Our freedom of speech, of assembly, of the press. We must spread the word throughout the land. Peace.
April 12th, 1861. The Confederates fire on Fort Sumter and Lincoln calls for 75,000 volunteers.
Women who had worked the peace, now nursing the sick, burying the dead, tearing their tablecloths into bandages. Women playing the age-old woman's role.
Along the battle line, among mangled bodies in blue and gray, goes Clara Barton. She drops down on the ground beside a wounded boy and draws his tattered shirt over the place where an arm once was.
There now. You'll be a little warmer.
Thank you. Oh, Miss Barton. Miss Barton.
Why, what's the trouble? There, there now. Just cry if you like. You'll probably feel better.
I'm sorry. But seeing you... You don't even recognize me, do you?
Well, no,
I'm Charlie Hamilton, your old pupil.
Charlie Hamilton?
I used to carry your satchel home from school.
Oh.
I guess I'll never carry a satchel again.
My dear, faithful Charlie. General Sherman was right. War is hell. I hate it. Through and through, thought and act, body and soul, I hate it.
From the sacrifices of war, women learned the value of peace.
And when the rumble of guns had again died away, Clara Barton was in Washington, pleading with government officials.
For a Red Cross organization, an international committee to care for the wounded. 22 of the leading nations of the world have agreed to the plan. Why has the United States refused it?
I thought you hated war, Miss Barton.
I do. If there's any power on earth which can right the wrongs for which nations go to war, I pray that it be made manifest. This Red Cross would not be limited to war work. It could relieve the victims of peacetime disasters, too, in every nation.
My dear Miss Barton, you're an idealist, a dreamer. You don't understand human nature. This idea may sound fine, but it would never really work out in practice.
What do women know about war?
Men have always known far too much about it for the good of mankind. War has cost 1,000,000 times more than the whole world is worth. Poured out the best blood and crushed the fairest forms the good God has ever created. What do women know about war? They know enough to know that they want peace.
The In Europe, the dread rumble of war.
In the United States, in the director's office of a school for the blind, a woman scans the headlines. She is Julia Ward Howe, wife of the director. Slowly a look of horror comes over her face.
Samuel, have you read this about the Franco-Prussian War?
Yes. Horrible, isn't it?
It all seems so cruel, so unnecessary. Return to barbarism.
War is barbarism.
Why can't nations settle their disputes in some other way?
Why didn't we settle a civil war in some other way?
I don't know. I never thought of it before. Samuel.
Yes? What's the matter, Julia?
I've just realized I was partly responsible for the civil war.
You?
My battle hymn of the Republic.
Oh, nonsense. The war was well underway before you wrote it.
Still, it goaded the Union troops to fight.
Gave them courage, you mean?
Well, put it as you'd like. Who can say how many men it killed?
Oh, Julia.
Me, a woman, a mother, goading men to war. God forgive me.
No, you mustn't blame yourself.
Only I'd used that same power to keep us out of war. That's it. That's what I must do. I must work for peace. Perhaps if I devote the rest of my life to it, I can make up for what I've done.
Julia, my dear, you helped save the Union.
At what price? Think, Samuel, if all the women, all the mothers of mankind would interfere and prevent the wastage of human life. They alone know what it costs. If they would join together in a great world peace congress and tell the whole world that the sword of murder is not the balance of justice.
And throughout the world sounded the appeal of Julia Ward Howe in English, French, German, Spanish, Italian, Swedish. But the world was not ready to listen. For 40 years, Julia Ward Howe worked unceasingly for peace. Speaking, writing, organizing, using all the freedoms of speech, press, assembly, and petition to win freedom from war. And beside her now worked another woman, Jane Addams, servant of humanity, who proved in her settlement house that people of many nations could live together in peace. 1909. A large women's college is giving a dinner in honor of Jane Addams and Julia Ward Howe. Mrs. Howe, now 90 years old, smiles rather wryly and leans toward Miss Addams.
We women haven't won the battle yet, Jane, for the Lord or ourselves.
No, but thanks to you, we will win it. The sentiment for peace is growing every day throughout the world. I think the time for your international conference is...
World War. Fortunately, Julia Ward Howe never knew it. Jane Addams retained her dream, her courage. April 28, 1915. In the center of war-torn Europe, in the Peace Palace at The Hague, women from 12 of the world's great nations are met in council. Before them stands their chairman, Jane Addams.
While battalions of women from Russia and Austria fight at the front, we meet to find a peaceful solution of this war, to secure permanent peace for the world. Delegates from 7 of the belligerent nations, as well as from neutrals. I had hoped that we might have some delegates from Germany, too. Perhaps they felt diffident about coming. Or maybe they couldn't get through the battle line.
Might be rather embarrassing.
Yes, with us of the Allied nations present. At any rate, we must get on with our meeting. The secretary will read our resolutions. Firstly, this International Congress of Women advocates universal disarmament. Secondly, it proposes to send an international committee of women to the leaders of all the belligerent nations to ask them to arbitrate. One moment. I think someone is coming in at the rear of the hall.
Why, yes. Two women, I wonder who they are. They look rather frightened.
The German delegates. That's who they are.
The Germans? What should we do? How should we receive them?
There's only one way.
Fellow delegates! Our German friends are here at last.
Look, Miss Adams. Look who's leading them down the aisle. A French woman and an English woman.
and the guns of Europe are belching death. A war to end war.
In a shell-torn hut on the Belgian frontier, four women face a French army officer. Three of the four are Americans. Dr. Alice Hamilton, Emily Balch, and Jane Addams.
And so we want to go through the lines.
Mais, c'est une folie. Women to go through to Germany at a time like this?
Oh, but we must go through, Lieutenant. We must reach the Kaiser.
Mais, c'est impossible. These guns, so close, it's suicide.
And while we stand here arguing, thousands of boys are being shot to pieces.
It is a guerre, Miss Adams, I say. It is war.
And I say it is murder.
What is the use to argue with a woman? What do they know about war?
All through the war, Jane Addams kept up her plea for peace. Branded as a coward, a traitor, a yellow pacifist, reviled by her countrymen, shunned by many friends, she stood firm against defeat. But as the smoke of battle cleared away, hatred for Jane Addams died down. With the armistice had come woman suffrage. 2 million women now turned their energies toward peace. And leading them, Carrie Chapman Catt, founder of the League of Women Voters.
Women for Peace. 6 million women, members of 11 national organizations, joining Carrie Chapman Catt's Committee for Study of the Cause and Cure of War.
Others joining the National Council for the Prevention of War and the Women's International League for Peace.
Hundreds of thousands of women in different organizations working for peace.
In 1931, Jane Addams, with Nicholas Murray Butler, was awarded the Nobel Prize for Peace. In 1932, Mary Woolley, president of Mount Holyoke College, was sent as an American delegate to the disarmament conference at Geneva.
More and more women joining international peace conferences in 1934, 35, 36.
Five women aviators in the People's Mandate to End War, a flying caravan of envoys to South America in 1937, 1938. 1939, another war in Europe, war on the seven seas, war in every land. Men and women debating ways and means to maintain our neutrality.
Surely there must be some other way out. War is suicide. We must abolish it.
You can't change human nature.
I don't agree. If the women of this country would work to establish a permanent world peace...
Impossible. What could they do?
Well, they might recall something that the women of South America once did. Back in 1900... when Chile and the Argentine were nearly at war, when men thought that 80,000 square miles of the Andes Mountains was a prize worth fighting for. But while men piled up bullets and spread hatred propaganda, women went to church on an Easter Sunday and heard the words of Bishop Benevento.
Crush all thoughts of war. Let us stop it. I cry peace. Cannot the day come when a statue of Christ the Redeemer be placed on the peak of the Andes, where from its great height the people of Argentina and Chile can see him and remember his preachment and turn away from thoughts of war?
And the women listened and went home with hope quickening their hearts and new words on their lips. Women of Argentina and Chile now pleading openly.
We must send petitions to our Congress. We must ask them to decide this conflict by arbitration.
So the women spoke and sent petitions. And the bullets stopped piling up. And in 1903... the republics of Argentina and Chile signed a treaty.
Both nations agree to submit to arbitration.
all questions of whatever nature which may rise between them.
And a woman remembered those words of the bishop.
Let us build a statue of Christ and place it on the boundary line, high on the Andes.
Bueno, senora. I will give some money for it.
And I. We will melt the bullets and cannon of war and pour them into a mold to form our Christ of the Andes.
So it stands today, a gigantic statue high on the mountain's pass between Argentina and Chile, just as it stood on that day when the people dragged it up over the snow-covered mountain, just as it stood while the bishop spoke.
Sooner shall these mountains crumble into dust than Argentinians and Chileans break the peace sworn to at the foot of Christ, the Redeemer.
That was 35 years ago. And there the statue stands as a beacon light for mankind, testimony to the work of the gallant women of South America. What can we do? We, the women of North America, that will bring a practical and lasting peace to our land, to our world.
You have heard the second of a series of educational radio programs entitled Gallant American Women. Today's broadcast dealt with women and peace, the story of woman's fight against war. Through the cooperation of the Columbia University Press, the complete script of this broadcast is now available in bulletin form. A list of good books to read, a schedule of coming programs of this series, and other features are included in this publication. If you are a chairman or secretary of a group, you will find this publication especially useful. It should help you to organize meetings devoted to the theme of the program. And because so many of you have written in about gallant American women, the National Broadcasting Company is happy to extend this invitation to you to be our guests at future broadcasts of this program. Tickets may be had by applying to the Guest Relations Department of NBC. The listings of future programs should help you schedule listening group meetings, too. For your copy, send 10 cents to Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. May I repeat? Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. Next week's program deals with women on the land, the story of the part played by women in agriculture, and after that, women the providers, the story of how women have solved problems in feeding the family. Gallant American Women, an NBC public service feature, is a series of dramatizations prepared and presented by the United States Office of Education with the cooperation of the Women's Division of NBC and with the assistance of the Works Project Administration. Script by Jane Ashman, program supervisor Eva Hansel, historical consultant Mrs. Mary Beard of the World Center for Women's Archives, original music by Rudolf Schramm. For your copy of the script, send 10 cents to Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. This is the National Broadcasting Company.